You ever watch the news and think, whoa, this seems...
unprecedented?
Unprecedented.
It's unprecedented.
This has never happened before. This is unprecedented.
I'm Matt Bevan, and my show, if you're listening, is about finding times that what's happening now has happened before and figuring out what we can learn from it. Learning from history. I mean, who could imagine? New episodes every Tuesday and Thursday on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
From Wurundjeri Country, I'm Luke Sidham-Dundon, and today, from the Radio National Breakfast team on The Breakfast Wrap, you're going to hear our full interview with the Israeli ambassador to Australia after the IDF chooses not to pursue criminal proceedings over the killing of an Australian aid worker and her colleagues.
You know, there are tragic circumstances in a war zone, and we're very sorry for the family, but that does not always mean that there's criminal liability.
We'll also hear from another organisation, furious the IDF won't be following up on the killing of their workers.
We're outraged by the findings. They don't show the Israeli Defence Forces taking accountability for their actions.
More from Médecins Sans Frontières later on. It's a pretty packed program with both of those interviews and all of the context surrounding them. So before we get into them, let's go back to 2024. When news of these strikes on the World Central Kitchen convoy broke across the world.
This is one of the last videos Australian aid worker Zomi Francom posted from Central Gaza.
Hey, this is Zomi in Chef Olivier. We're at the Jirabalaf Kitchen.
She was there with the charity World Central Kitchen, delivering food and supplies to starving Palestinians, when her life was abruptly cut short. Zomi Francom is among at least seven international aid workers from Australia, Poland, the UK, the US, Canada, and a Palestinian man killed in an apparent Israeli strike in Gaza. The World Central Kitchen says the team was travelling in two armoured cars branded with the charity logo and another vehicle without armour. It says despite coordinating movements with the Israeli Defence Force, the convoy was hit as it was leaving the Deir al-Balah warehouse after unloading more than 100 tonnes of food. Zomi Francom's family says they're in shock.
The ABC's Lauren Day with that report back in 2024. In this interview, you're going to hear the name Binskin. It refers to the Australian investigations into the attacks, led by retired Defence Air Chief Marshal Mark Binskin. It found that the IDF had misidentified a vehicle. There was confirmation bias and also a failure on the IDF's part to read and get across the movement plan approved for the convoy that it hit. The subsequent strikes were found to be in breach of the IDF rules. Two officers were fired within weeks of the strikes. Others received reprimands. Now, more than 2 years later, the Israeli military has said that officers made a mistake, assuming someone providing security was Hamas, and that given the convoy had deviated from its route, they thought it had been taken over, so they fired upon it. The charity, World Central Kitchen, has condemned this account, saying that it muddies the story and it shifts the blame. Just hours before this news broke this week, Zomi Francom's family had actually been standing alongside the Foreign Minister, Penny Wong, at an event at Parliament House to launch a humanitarian award with Miss Francom's name. It was on World Humanitarian Day. Then, shortly after, they all learnt of the IDF's findings. The government has called the timing insulting.
It's certainly not good enough that on World Humanitarian Day, of all days, they release this so-called report that essentially says, yes, we're responsible, but nothing to see here. Zomi represented the best of Australians, and that's why it deserves better, her family deserved better, and frankly, Australia deserves better.
That's the Prime Minister speaking on 7:30 last night. So yesterday, the Israeli ambassador was called in to a meeting with the foreign minister amid calls for him to be expelled from the country. You heard that yesterday on The Breakfast Wrap from the UN Commissioner Chris Sidoti and also the Greens leader, Senator Larissa Waters. So today, on Radio National Breakfast, Sally Sara interviewed the Israeli ambassador, Dr. Hillel Newman. He was on the phone. The line's a little scratchy, but we're going to play you the interview in full.
Ambassador, yesterday, the Foreign Affairs Minister, Senator Penny Wong, had this to say.
We do not have confidence in the IDF's military advocate general's process, given the many unanswered questions.
Why should Australia have confidence in the military advocate general's process in Israel?
Well, allow me just to explain the circumstances of the event. We're talking about an aid convoy about 2 years ago in the midst of the war, and Israel facilitated aid convoys, even though it was a war zone. And in this
which it's obliged to do.
Yes, and it does. It did so. And in this specific case, the aid convoy added armed personnel without telling Israel, without informing Israel, and then deviated from their route and changed the times of the route. And therefore, it led the circumstances led the soldiers who were there to assume and think that the Hamas had taken control over the aid convoy. And it was a mistaken approach by the IDF. And disciplinary measures were taken against the soldiers. Five senior soldiers were disciplined. Two of them had been removed completely from their post, and three were disciplined and reprimanded. But the question that was before the chief military prosecutor was, is there criminal liability? And in that aspect, because of the circumstances where armed personnel were added and the fact that they deviated and did not inform their deviation, this led them in a reasonable way to doubt that this convoy is actually has been taken control by the Hamas. Therefore, and this, by the way, has also been confirmed by Mark Binskin, who was the Chief Marshal of Australia, who went specially to Israel, was given full access to the situation. He said unprecedented access to their information. And he also came to the understanding that there was no intentional attack against the aid workers themselves. It was a reasonable mistake. Therefore, there's no criminal liability. That does not mean that disciplinary measures were not taken. They were taken. Regarding the confidence in the process, I want to specifically stress that the chief military prosecutor is totally independent in Israel, and he came to his findings according to his own independent research, which is like a court of any kind, and he has independence.
But it's not a court, is it?
It's the military prosecution, which is a totally independent authority. And just, you know, people should know that they came to a ruling on five cases. In two cases, they went forward with criminal prosecution against the soldiers. And in three cases, they decided that there is a reasonable reasoning for the soldiers to have acted the way they did. And therefore, there's no criminal liability.
Ambassador, is the Israeli government, the Israeli military, open to further investigation of this case using other mechanisms? I know that the Attorney General in Israel can review decisions of the MAG. Is this case completely closed, or are there some options on the table?
We have another questioning, and we're talking about the possibility of Binskin himself coming again and having again access to the people who made the decision. There are all kinds of ideas of how to share the background for the decisions that were made. Whether there's an appeal process, I'm not sure about that. I must check it myself. I'm not sure whether there is an appeal process. But if there is, they're totally open to that.
This is on the official website of the Military Advocate General Corps. It says the Attorney General may review decisions of the MAG. It also says review decisions of the MAG that the Attorney General considers to be of special public interest. Moreover, a complainant or a non-governmental organisation can also challenge the MAG's decision before the Attorney General as to whether to open a criminal investigation or to file an indictment. Are those avenues, are they closed in the view of the Israeli government, or are they possibilities to pursue further investigation or legal processes?
Any legal process that is available, they can use. These aspects under investigation for And I was actually prodded to try and push this forward, which I did by the assistance of the president of Israel, who insisted that they come to conclusion on this issue. But if any avenue that is available as an appeal system, you know, Israel is a robust democracy where the prosecution even indicts the prime minister. I don't think there's any other country in the entire Middle East that has such a robust democratic process. Allow me also just to express sorrow for the family, because we do grieve on the situation with the family. This was unintentional, as I, Chief Marshal Mark Benskin, that was unintentional and not deliberate in any way.
Let's talk about the evidence in this investigation. The phone line's dropping out a little bit for us, so apologies if I've missed something here. You were talking about perhaps a possibility of retired Air Marshal Benskin returning to Israel. Is Israel now open to Australian officials and or the family of Zomi Frankum getting access to the audio of the drone footage of what occurred? Because while some of the footage has been available, the audio has not. Is that a possibility?
I cannot give an answer on a drone, because the drone may also information which is difficult to share with people. But what I can say is that the military prosecution, which, as I said before, is totally independent, had full access to all the information, and they came to a conclusion after 2 years of investigation that does not cast doubt on the reasonability of the soldiers making. As I said, there were
circumstances. If that's the case, why not allow limited release or public release of that audio if it doesn't cast any doubt? Why not do that?
As I said, the drone itself is maybe problematic because it have intelligence information on it. That's an IDF aspect which I'm not privy to. But what I can say is that all the information that was available
on the
issue...
But hang on, at the National Press Club address previously, you committed to following up on why the audio of the strike hasn't been released. What is your update?
Yes, I committed to push this forward in order to come to closure, which I did. And I even involved the president of Israel, Isaac Herzog, who was helpful in this aspect. Regarding the drone, I said categorically that that is a military aspect which has information, intelligence information, and therefore I'm not privy to that loop of whether it can be released or not. What I do say is that Israel is open to any further, if they want conversations like between the legal teams of Australia and Israel, they want to send people to discuss this issue. We're open to all of that because we're a robust democracy, completely transparent.
If you're completely transparent and a robust democracy, for someone like a retired Air Marshal Benskin, surely that audio can be shared with someone of his caliber.
I don't think that Australia shares all its intelligence aspects with other nations, even if they're friendly and they're like-minded. That is a question which is up to security agencies. It's not a question on my plate. But what I can say is that anything that we can develop, we do. And Benskin received unprecedented access. He said it himself in his report. He wrote categorically that he was given unprecedented access and that he came to the determination that the attack was not deliberate. He stated it himself in his report. You know, there are tragic circumstances in a war zone, and we're very sorry for the family, but that does not always mean that there's criminal liability. Let's make a distinction between the two. You know, there are also the investigations of Australian soldiers and their behavior in Afghanistan, and it's been more than 10 years, and they haven't come to closure or conclusions about this. This is a war zone which has its difficulties, but I said there were very special circumstances with this convoy.
Let's look at the issue of the timing of the release of this information. Wednesday was World Humanitarian Day. That very evening, Zomi Frankum's family and the Foreign Minister were at Parliament House in Canberra launching a humanitarian award in Zomi Frankum's honour. Do you accept that the timing of this decision has created further upset and distress for Zomi Frankum's family and further anger and pushback from the federal government of Australia?
It could be that the timing was not good, but, you know, I was under pressure and Israel was under pressure to release the findings as soon as possible. And the moment they came to the conclusions about five cases, they released them. I don't think that they had in their mind at the time that they're releasing it on a day that the Australian government is meeting the family. There was no intention in that aspect. We ourselves, as the embassy, we put out posts in honor of World Humanitarian Day, but the release of the
So you knew it was World Humanitarian Day?
I knew here in the embassy, of course, but the processing of the findings had no connection with World Humanitarian Day. The moment came to the findings and they could release them, they released them. They didn't. They assumed that people want to know as soon as possible.
The Binskin Review recommended an apology and reparations to Zoe Frankham's family. Yesterday, the Foreign Minister, Penny Wong, said at the minimum the Frankham family deserved an apology. I've heard you even in this interview say you're sorry for the family, but will Israel apologise to the family?
As I said, we express deep sorrow and grief with the family. Apology has criminal liability sometimes, and therefore I cannot commit on behalf of the State of Israel in that terminology. But any other terminology, we state categorically and forthright, we say that we're deeply sorry with the family. We express grief with the family. Reparations is an issue that we can check and will be checked by Israel. It's not my decision here in Australia. But the issue of sorrow and grief of the family has been expressed personally and generally, very categorically.
Just in terms of the timing of what unfolded in 2024, even if the first strike on this convoy was a catastrophic error, why were two more strikes allowed 2 minutes apart, given that we know that there were some survivors from the initial strike?
That's a real military operational question, and I can only assume. I wasn't there. I wasn't in the IDF at the time doing the attacks. But one can only assume that if the soldiers are working under the understanding that this convoy has been taken over by the Hamas, then they do what is necessary to take out the convoy. And they assume that the aid workers were not on the convoy anymore and the Hamas had taken over. Let me stress that the Hamas looted and took over convoys all the time. And that is the reason why the convoy took armed personnel on the convoy. If only they would have told Israel that they have armed personnel, then we would have understood that the armed personnel is their hiring, their services that were hired against Hamas. But sadly, they did not inform Israel, and Israel just assumed that Hamas had taken control. And once the Hamas had taken control, they struck the convoy in order to hit at the Hamas, but not at aid workers. That was very specifically checked and came to a very clear conclusion that the soldiers had no idea that the aid workers were still there and they had no intention to hit aid workers. That happens in war zones. It's sad, but it happens.
Ambassador, the Foreign Minister Penny Wong says she doesn't have a satisfactory explanation regarding the senior IDF brigade officer involved in the strikes being a signatory in a letter to the IDF Chief of General Staff calling for aid to be restricted in Gaza. Have you been given an explanation for that?
Look, there are different opinions about how to run and handle the aid to Gaza. A lot of the aid was looted by Hamas, was taken over by Hamas. A lot of the convoys were completely kidnapped and hijacked by the Hamas. And therefore, there were different opinions about how much aid, how to run the aid. It's legitimate for a commander of some kind to have his opinion. In the end, we must measure it according to policy. And in the final results, even the UN announced that there was more than enough nutrition and food that entered Gaza, four times even more than their requirements according to international law. So all these claims of starvation in Gaza and a lack of aid in Gaza are unfounded, untrue.
So there was no lack of aid in Gaza?
No, even the UN proved that there were more, three, four times more than the requirements according to the UN. You know, there are specific requirements about how many calories per day per average, and Israel facilitated aid in amounts that are unprecedented and went far beyond the requirements according to international law.
Dr. Newman, just finally, so I understand your position and the position of the representing the position of the government of Israel. Obviously, there's been a very strong reaction to these findings, particularly in the relation to the death of Zomi Frankham. Would it be fair to say, is it accurate, if I'm understanding, that the Israeli government may be open to further legal avenues and that the issue of reparations is still being considered? Is that accurate?
Yes, that is true. Israel is open to discussions on the legal aspects. We can share information with legal teams of Australia. And the aspect of reparations can be checked, definitely.
So that hasn't been checked as yet?
We need a specific request and then it's investigated according to the rules of reparations in such cases.
Dr. Hillel Newman, we've run out of time. We've gone over time, in fact. Thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That is the Israeli ambassador to Australia, Dr. Hillel Newman there. Plenty to digest in that interview, including a key line that Israel would consider any request for reparations for Zomi Frankem's death should a request be made. He also said that drone footage could not be shared because it could contain intelligence. He said that the timing of the announcement wasn't intended to coincide with World Humanitarian Day. And importantly, he did not issue an apology to Zomi Frankem's family, saying that it potentially carried legal liability. Zomi Frankem's case is just one from this huge information dump from the IDF that is making headlines around the world. Because the IDF has announced it will launch criminal investigations into two separate incidents in which IDF soldiers killed 5-year-old girl Hind Rajab, her family, and two paramedics in January that were sent along to save them. Also, more than a dozen other paramedics 2 months later. Still, though, there are others frustrated by the IDF's response. Two other cases that won't be subjected to a criminal probe both involve workers from Médecins Sans Frontières. In November 2022, two people were killed when their MSF-marked car was fired upon by members of the Israeli military. Months later, in February 2024, a tank fired on a house, killing two relatives of MSF staff and injuring six others. The IDF found that there were mitigating circumstances in both cases, and it says it won't be taking any further action. So this morning, we interviewed Tom Roth, the Executive Director of MSF for Australia and New Zealand, and here's what he told us.
I think firstly, we're outraged by the findings. They don't show the Israeli Defence Forces taking accountability for their actions. We expected our colleagues to have protection. They deserve protection and they deserve justice, and that's not being provided.
Israel says there were mitigating circumstances in these cases. What do you make of that finding?
If we look at each of the cases, we in MSF, we are constantly in touch with the Israeli authorities. We're constantly getting authorization for our movements. They're aware of where we are at all times. And the idea that they did not know or were unaware, our vehicles are marked, our houses and clinics are marked. It's very clear that they knew that we were there and that they targeted us.
What do you think about some of the comments from the IDF on deconfliction? That is when aid organisations provide information about their movements, their personnel, their vehicles, the route that they'll be taking and the task and the time in which that will happen.
We think that the Israeli authorities need to take account for provision of humanitarian aid. It is a basic right, and the fact that they aren't providing that and they're not providing accountability for actions is appalling. I think what disgusted us even more is that they provided these findings on World Humanitarian Day. This is a day where we mourn colleagues lost in the line of duty. It's the time when we demand greater protection for humanitarians, and that was the day that they saw fit to release these appalling findings. We expect the Australian government, for instance, to expect from the Israelis the same level of accountability that they hold our defence forces. We would expect them to hold that accountability to the Israelis. We were pleased that Minister Wong also expressed that outrage and that disappointment about that lack of accountability, and we would expect the Australian government and all governments to follow that up.
Tom Roth is the Executive Director of MSF for Australia and New Zealand. Well, thank you so much for listening to both of those interviews, and indeed all the interviews right across the week on The Breakfast Wrap. They were done by Sally Sarah, produced by the Radio National Breakfast team. Today's Breakfast Wrap was produced by Nancy Notson, and as always, our executive producer is Eleni Soltis. A big couple stories there, and a big week of news. So take care over the weekend. We'll see you Monday.